Grade 1 Conference, Lecture 39, Storytelling, Part 2. When we are handing out beeswax crayons or paper or pretty much anything to the children for the first time, it is very good for us to accompany that with a story or at least a lengthy imagination of what it is that the children are receiving. There's a wonderful saying by Oscar Wilde that a cynic is a person who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. This is a phrase you want to bring to your parents now and then, because it's one of the reasons that they're sending their children to the Waldorf school, because they don't want them to be cynics. They don't want them to be materialists. Yet on the other hand, materialism and even cynicism live so strongly in our culture that families and children are touched by it in our time. So the need to have everything that the child is working with imbued with meaning, imbued with something that goes beyond, that's expensive, which it generally is, and we can't get that easily from Germany, so don't lose your crayons. Of course, all true, but that's not going to work very powerfully. It's really what lives in the child's soul and becomes something of a tiny step towards conscience, we might say, about the way they handle material. So let's look at some of the things that you will be giving the children in the first days and first weeks of school. And you want to be careful not to give them everything at once, you know, not to sort of have pencil cases with their scissors and their crayons and whatever, but rather to ration it out. Certainly when you give them crayons, you'll probably want to give them paper as well. The two do tend to go together, but then you don't have to give them a whole lot of other stuff on that day as well. So some things you're going to give them. Crayons, yes. Block and stick. You may or may not want to do a major differentiation, imaginatively speaking, between those two. They're certainly made of basically the same substance. Paper, yes, that's very important. You may be giving them some kind of pad to work on. In some schools, these are constructed by the teacher parents out of paper. In other schools, they've just given in to modern times and use some little piece of, rubbery plastic material or whatever that helps to make up for the unevenness in a wooden Waldorf desk. You may be giving them a pair of scissors to work with on one or another craft project. You're going to be giving them, or at least they're going to be sharing, paint, painting paper, watercolor paper, brushes. So all of that will also be very important to try to bring in an imaginative way. And beeswax, which I haven't said very much about yet, but don't worry, that has its turn. Something else that has a very special quality. Now, what's wonderful about much of what we give them is that it really is unique to Waldorf. I think, it's clear there's a difference between Crayola crayons and beeswax. Children can tell that, and you don't see anything like block crayons anywhere else. And the paints that we use are very different from the sort of poster colors that are there. And beeswax for modeling, pretty unique to Waldorf. There are those who are bringing clay for modeling. That's become a big trend in Germany and is gradually becoming better known in North America. So there's something else to introduce. And the bag with stones in it as well. Before they actually start to work with that, you may want to say something about those bags. All of this creates in the children You know, when you start to tell a story, things come alive in human beings that are not there when they simply hear a recitation of facts. This is so powerful and has become so widely known that there's even something called narrative medicine now, in which doctors learn how to talk to patients or patients' families about their condition by turning it into a narrative, which doesn't mean, you know, once upon a time a person learned he had 6 months to live, but rather how to try to bring everything into a connectedness, into an integrated whole, by putting yourself into it as the narrator and trying to bring your own consciousness as a unifying quality. And of course, we're not there at that lofty cognitive step yet, but rather we are simply trying to give the children a set of pictures, better put, imaginations, that can live behind what they are working with, to give it meaning so that in the end, their will is going to tend to treat it better, to work with it carefully, with a quality of respect, even reverence, certainly joy, not to just kind of throw it around, drop it all over the place. I remember vividly a girl who joined my class fairly late, sixth grade, I think it was, and she had a tendency always, if she was quite a perfectionist, very gifted artist, and if she didn't like her work, she would say, "Mr. Schwartz, I don't like this, could I do it over again?" And on the whole, I would say, "Yes, go ahead." Sometimes I'd check it out and say, "No, you could improve it." But let's say I said, "Go ahead, you can do it over again." She would take the paper, crumple it up, and throw it on the floor. That was what she would always do. And I would say, "Please pick up the paper and put it in the trash." And she would say sometimes, "Well, at home, Maria does that." And, you know, I just thought, if only she had been with us in earlier grades and had a different feeling about that paper and the crumpling it up, and hopefully a very different feeling about people who worked for her family. And I just would always think, well, I wonder if when, you know, you have children, they will have their Maria, or if you will be their Maria. But anyway, you know, how can we help the modern child really care about the materials? We know how expensive they are. We know how difficult to obtain they are. But the child has no need to understand things on that level. So instead, we are going to try to work very directly in their soul. So here's an example that I will give you that I would present to my first graders about beeswax crayons. All summer long, we can see the bees buzzing around their hive or going far, far away from their hive to find whatever sweetness they can in all of the flowers for miles around. And they will sometimes take very long journeys because one of the other bees danced outside the hive and in that dance showed them that there was very sweet nectar to be found in a meadow, well, way over there, towards where the sun is shining in the sky. And so the other bees would set out, and they would drink of that nectar, and then they'd bring it back into the hive, and little by little they would turn that nectar into the very sweet honey. And then the beekeeper, at the end of the summer, will get out the extra honey that the bees don't need. And I'm sure all of you have tasted wonderful, sweet, sweet honey. But that's not all that the bees are doing. They're also pulling out of the flowers pollen, just this little sort of flaky, often golden dust. And if you see a bee flying around, especially at the height of the summer, you'll see that pollen is just dusting their legs and their stomach very often. That comes back too. And they chew on that pollen. And they chew and chew and chew on it. And then they turn that pollen into wax, into what we call beeswax. And I know that some of you have seen beeswax. Sometimes, in fact, when you buy honey, they tell you on the bottle, this still contains some of the wax, because the wax is what they use to make wonderful little compartments. And in those compartments, that's where the honey is stored. And when the honey is all eaten up, when it's no longer needed, then they don't really need that beeswax anymore. And the beekeeper can take that out as well. And that's often called a honeycomb. And if you look at it, it's very, very beautiful, because every little compartment, every little space is exactly alike. And they are all little six-sided figures. And in fact, first graders, before too long, we're going to learn how to do what the bees do and make those six-sided figures ourselves. But we'll talk about that later. That will come a little bit later in first grade. But for now, I just want to tell you a little bit more about those honeycombs and those beeswax panels that the beekeeper has taken out. The very best of those honeycombs, the most fragrant and the most beautiful, are taken by the beekeeper to a place where people have gathered who know how to make something very special from those honeycombs. First, they make sure that all of the honey is gone, and maybe they're able to taste it themselves and see how sweet it is. And then they press down that wax, because it's very strong. But on the other hand, when you press down on it, especially if you're using warm hands or sort of a warm plate, you can push it down and it will become extremely flat. And some of that flat, flat beeswax is taken over and used to make the beeswax that we're going to be modeling with. But much of it is taken to another place where, over the summer, farmers and florists and others have been gathering plants which have the most vivid and beautiful colors. And they have to gather sometimes hundreds or thousands of one flower to be able to boil it down. And then they get a wonderful, wonderful color, or perhaps oil is added to it, and that also extracts the color. And all of this then is mixed with the beeswax, so that we have the beeswax, which comes from the hard work of the bees all summer long, and we have the red color that comes from the red flowers growing all summer long, the golden color, the green color, whatever colors we're using. Once upon a time, those were living in flowers, or sometimes even in stones that had to get crushed and pulverized and also mixed with the beeswax. And this has to be done very, very carefully. The beeswax is gently warmed, the color is added to it, and then something else that, over the course of the summer, flows through the trees, something called turpentine. A little bit of that is also put into these crayons. So when we hold one of these crayons, as I'm holding this red one in front of you right now, it's as though you're holding an entire summertime. You can think of the hard work of the bees. You can think of the growing of the flowers. You can think of the flow of the turpentine, and maybe even of the rocks and the stones with special colors in them that have allowed themselves to be crushed and added to these crayons. And then above all, we have to be very grateful to those men and women who work so hard putting everything together just right and then pouring out the hot colored waxy turpentine into little molds, the way you might make ice cubes at home or icicles in the summer out of ice cream. So they do the same thing with the beeswax. And finally, when it cools, out it comes into boxes, and these boxes have to be sent over the ocean by boat very often, sometimes perhaps by plane, and then they make their way to our supply store. Some of you know where that is. You've seen it. And finally, into our classroom. Think of that. All that it took to put those beeswax crayons in our hands. And that is exactly where they are going to go today. Because right over here, in this basket that some of you were asking about earlier, look, I'll take off the cloth on top, and there they are, 24 boxes of beeswax crayons with your name on them. Now, I just want to mention to you that I was telling you that story in the same way I would tell it to the children. It's not like I secretly have a script here or anything like that. I've never told that story quite the same way twice. And when you have the children in front of you, you're also perhaps going to already start to bring a little bit more of temperament into it, you know, and maybe you can picture the flowers growing in a very slow and leisurely way and the bees buzzing around very, very strongly and cholerically, as it were. So certainly it's going to be different. But you too want to be able to tell a story like that almost as though it's improvised. Not quite, though. Some things that I want to point out that I did not do. I did not, and I stress this, please, I did not tell the children that the bees made the beeswax crayons. This is something I hear all the time. The bees made the beeswax crayons, and the wasps made your paper, and the, you know, the boars cut their own bristles off and made the brushes. No, 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 no. Human beings turn all of this stuff into material that we can use. And there's nothing wrong with talking about the role of human beings. And I was basically describing a factory to the children. They have to understand that, you know, even wonderful ethereal Waldorf supplies come from factories. And if you ever want to visit the place where anthroposophical remedies are made in Germany, the Walita factory, you'd imagine that you're watching Mercedes-Benz is getting manufactured. Very important and very significant. So the human element is not missing where it is appropriate to be there. And it's not as though I'm trying to say, well, you know, the bees drink of different colored flowers, so their honey is like differently colored, and the beeswax is differently colored. You know, it's a bit of an elaborate thing, actually, and that's also fine for the children to realize that this little block of color that they have is a lot going into it from multiple sources. Lastly, and as an American, I realize this is not always something that I can do that well. I try as hard as I can to avoid sentimentality. And those of you from the English-speaking world, Americans, Canadians, and particularly you people in the United Kingdom who got this whole thing started, sentimentality, the kind of Victorian greeting card sensibility, the, you know, that brings us all of these sweet little fairies with little tutus on and things like that. We have to be very, very careful about that, not to make these stories oozy and sentimental, because for one thing, we're going to lose the boys. The boys just don't want to hear that. They're very interested in, let's say, the fact that people had to get turpentine and heat it up and pour it into molds. And, you know, that there's an industrial process going on. There's nothing wrong with that. We just want to bring everything into a coherent, imaginative picture in these stories. So that is very, very important for us to do. And you have to see for yourself what feels comfortable for you and how you can work with these stories. But they are very important, and they will probably be the first stories that you actually create yourself in the course of the year, but not the last ones. And we'll talk about other stories that you create for yourself in the next lecture.